Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
What is this, amateur hour?
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Ain't no podcast can compete with AHPKC. Don't you know the amateurs are always bringing heat? Ain't no podcast can compete with AHPKC. Did you really think we'd quit before 2019? His darkness makes great nicknames and clever games, and Ryan runs things and goes by three names. We waken up out our slumber because of Mahomes, Spagnuolo. It's showtime at Arrowhead, minus the heartbreaks. What about that dude in the cheetah print? Andy. Reed's the best. He owns the AFC West. Eating burgers in a Bahama. Football fun and friendship and watch. Kins. We're amateurs and Chiefs fans, but please do not mistake us with professional shows, because ain't no podcast can compete with AHPKC. AHPKC. Don't you know these amateurs are always bringing heat? Ain't no podcast can compete with AHPKC. Did you really think we'd quit before 2019?
Yeah. Oh yeah, you know what time it is. Welcome to Amateur Hour, folks. I am Ryan Scott Hall, and the man across from me, the king of carbohydrates, is Dirkness.
What's up? I really thought we did quit in 2019. Like, after that second one, Ben, what? We got six games here since the last pod.
It has, in fact, been a little while, but we're back, and better than ever.
Nothing's happened since then, has it?
I mean, you know, a couple things. Some wins and losses.
Strikes and gutter balls.
Yeah, strikes and gutters, that's correct. So, listen, Dirk.
What's up?
The Chiefs are technically no longer on the bye week, right? But we're coming off of the bye. You had a Sunday and a Monday where there was no Chiefs. You probably sat back and just watched Red Zone all day long.
I may have watched some Red Zone.
Well, here's the thing. When the team is on the bye, I feel like it's an opportunity. You know, usually people talk about, like, self-scouting, right? That's like, isn't that the term?
Mm-hmm.
You gotta like, look at the tape. You gotta figure out what's working and what's not. And the Chiefs were one of, I think, like, four teams to have the very, very last bye week of the season. And I'm trying to figure out, so like, in the big picture sense, what do you think that Andy Reid and company were trying to emphasize to the team during the bye week?
Interesting question. I would say the biggest weakness on the team has been the 4-minute offense, and you could even throw that into the 4-minute defense. I feel like they have blown a couple games this year with both the 4-minute offense, which we saw against the Chargers, where they almost lost. They didn't blow that game. Defense held on, but they still, you know, a couple of times for the offense to get a first down and really wrap that game up. Just all they needed was a field goal. Two or three different drives in there. Couldn't get it done. That was really frustrating. You saw the same thing happen with the Titans, obviously. It came down to that 3rd-and-2. Obviously, if, you know, any number of things goes a different way, they hold on in that one. So I think that 3rd-and-2 was maybe a little bit overblown, but, you know, also a play that you would expect a top-tier offense to be able to pick up. And then on defense, a couple of times where they couldn't get the ball back for their offense. Against the Packers, they drained the clock out, and against the Texans, both kind of situations where they got the ball with 5 or 6 minutes left and were just able to run the clock down. And so I think in that specific area, when you look at these four games, three of them which turned into loss, three of their four losses on the season, I think that's just something that they have to shore up. And if you're looking for like a specific trait on how you do that, I would look at physicality. And whether that means the ability to run the ball and stop the run, or, you know, something further than that, maybe more just emotional or mental kind of physicality. It's mental physicality. Is that a thing? Maybe just psyche. Yeah, but they need
mental strength or fortitude.
Mental makeup.
Yeah, you know.
But they need to figure out a way to, you know, come through in that area, because they're putting themselves in a position to win these games, or and then it's getting to this time of the game and they're not getting it done. So that would be my answer to that.
So, I mean, I think that this definitely speaks to the stat that I've seen, you know, being passed around over the last few weeks, that basically like every loss when Patrick Mahomes has been the starting quarterback for the Chiefs has been 7 points or fewer, I believe.
Yes.
So every single loss has been a one-score game. And so, you know, if you're saying...
Let me just...
No, please.
The Chiefs have not lost by 2 scores dating back to... Do you know the game?
I don't.
The Dallas Cowboys... The Hill Mary game.
Oh, okay.
Lost by 2 scores in that game. It's a 37-game streak where we have not lost by more than 1 score.
Interesting. So, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Like, if you're going to be, you know, we want to use the NFL common cliches. It's, you know, it's a game of inches, and wins and losses are determined on a razor's edge and whatever. I mean... But it's true, and it seems like if each of the Chiefs' losses over the last, you know, season and 3 quarters, I guess, are all coming in 1-score games, then yeah, trying to be efficient offensively and defensively in the fourth quarter, or as you put it, you know, in the final 4 minutes of games, I mean, I think that is a great place for them to start in terms of, if we can try to control these situations, then we're probably going to come out successfully. Now, I'm sure that there are a lot of Andy Reid detractors, you know, within or without the Chiefs fan base, that are going to point to maybe Andy's struggles with controlling the clock in those situations, clock management.
Which I've been saying for years that he's getting better at it. He's had a tough couple weeks for Andy.
And in some of these situations, it seems like, I know that I'm not in the minority and I don't need to just, like, play the amateur card. There are these, like, these different timing situations when it's appropriate and not appropriate to call timeouts at the end of the game that some people understand and get so irritated about. And many of us, if you're like me, are like, I don't fully get it. And so, because of that, now granted, I'm not paid... Lord knows however much Andy Reid is paid to get that. And I think if I were in his position, I would really want to know how to do those things correctly, to pay attention to details like that. And if it was something that maybe I felt like I don't need to have a full grasp on, then I would probably embrace this thing that people keep talking about and just, like, hire someone to do that job. Tell me when it's time to challenge. You know, make sure that I know when to call timeout and, like, have the strategist on the sidelines. Now, it doesn't have to be a 22-year-old who spends his time playing Madden and taking bong rips, but, you know...
Well, that's what the conversation started out as. I've heard Nick Wright talk about this. He's been saying it for years, that he wanted a team to hire a guy like this, and he reframed it so it was like they would hire a guy from an Ivy League school to help them decide these. And I was like, Nick... I mean, we talked about this. We weren't saying Ivy League school grad. We were saying a dude, a stone guy on his couch playing Madden, I think was the correct vernacular there for what we wanted to hire. But we were spitting that for, you know, when we were doing our weekly shows with Nick. And that seemed to come up all the time. And that was in the early Andy Reid years, so it was kind of a ongoing conversation there. But, yeah, props to Jim Harbaugh or James Harbaugh. What's John Harbaugh? John Harbaugh the III. Props to him, and you know it's impressive. I am impressed by what I remember Tampa Bay doing this a few years ago. Nothing really ever seemed to come with it. Maybe just because Tampa Bay sucks, so the guy never really had any hard decisions to make. So it just didn't really matter. But
it probably didn't help that their general manager was, you know, trading up to draft kickers in the second round and then, like, cut them a year later.
Yeah.
So listen, I just want to put out this disclaimer to any of our, you know, former Ivy League students, our Ivy League graduate listeners,
oh, yeah, We got a lot of them.
Not saying that you don't smoke weed, all right? Not trying to marginalize your, you know, your recreational activities. Just because you went to an Ivy League school doesn't mean that you don't play Madden and smoke weed, okay? Just, it's okay. I know Dirk may have offended you there. As if the alternative...
I'm trying to.
You know. Come on, take it easy, man. All right, so...
But the problems Andy's run into, I mean, just a quick list of them. He had the timeout, the Green Bay timeout. I know that this is one that you didn't really understand, but if you call timeout at, you know, from 2:43 to 2:45 kind of thing, you're kind of wasting the timeout. And it's just kind of like this weird little niche that you probably see in the entire NFL once or twice an entire season. Mm. And it happened to happen to Andy Reid on a primetime game, so it was just like... mismanagement apocalypse kind of thing going on. And then the other bad one is calling the timeout against Tennessee for the two-point conversion. And that one ended up not mattering that much, even though it was just like, it was inexplicable at the time. I mean, I lost my mind. But once we returned the kickoff, and I think we took the clock down to 16 seconds, it's pretty tough to call three timeouts with 16 seconds of gameplay. And we got in field goal range anyways. If we just execute a fucking field goal against Tennessee, we beat them, which is really frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a tough way to lose, having the botched and blocked field goals, you know, six in succession. I mean, honestly, the one that gets blocked, the Chiefs, frankly, like, had no business even being in that position after what had happened previously.
Yep.
Which is frustrating because, you know, they were... basically winning the entire game, and then yet it still felt impossible that that they were going to pull it out.
And really, not as bad a loss as a lot of us think. I mean, we all want to shit on Tennessee because they're boring, and they seem like they're the same team every year. If they would have been starting Tannehill since week one this year, they would have at least one more win. So we're looking at a 7-4 team, yeah. You know, maybe even better. Because Tannehill is a marked improvement over Mariota. And they got a good team around them. Their defense is solid. Derrick Henry, obviously... but not as bad a loss as a lot of people want to make it. And as bad as it seemed like in the tie at the moment.
Right.
Where it just seemed like, how could we fucking lose to this team? But they might end up making the playoffs this year.
It's certainly possible. What Tennessee is doing
but
with him.
How bad is Mariota that Ryan Tannehill is just this huge improvement over?
And it's wild because it's not necessarily that like Tannehill, you know, the thrower is really what's changed things for him. I mean, what he's done with his legs has been a huge improvement. Mariota, for whatever reason, maybe wasn't comfortable running the ball anymore, got his bell rung, you know, one too many times or something. But Tannehill, in the last 2 weeks, their last two wins against the Chiefs and then who did they...
Jags.
In the Jags on Sunday, Tannehill threw fewer than 20 passes in both of those games.
Yep.
Like, I mean, Tennessee is doing something a little different, you know? And it's like, you know, Tannehill is not Lamar Jackson, but it's almost like they figured out, and I promise I'll cut this sidebar off after this point, but, like, it's almost like Tannehill's figured out that, like, teams are afraid to hit the quarterback because of the way that they've been protected. So yeah. He's just like, I'm just going to be really
I'm just going to run straight
about running, and people are not going to want to hit me.
It certainly worked against us in that one play. That was a tough one to go back.
Frustrating. So you mentioned, like, in terms of ways to address the Chiefs trying to finish games, and that physicality is maybe one way to do this. So I'm curious, like, what would like Coach Dirk say to the team if you felt like we need to emphasize physicality? I mean, is this like a Pacino in Any Given Sunday where he's like, defense, you know, you gotta do something. You gotta hit somebody. I don't know. Like, I don't know how to take a team that where, especially if you look at like the Chiefs offense, right? Normally when you think about physicality, I think most people associate that with the way that a defense plays, unless it is, you know, exotic smash mouth or whatever, like some of the offensive systems that we've seen over the last however many years. But it seems like it's almost always a defensive thing. And so for a team like the Chiefs that are really offense-oriented, and I think that people are going to say, because so much of what they do is predicated upon, like, speed and design from Andy Reid, like, how do you improve the physicality offensively inside of a season when you can't just be like, I'm going to get three new offensive linemen, you know, straight out of the Richie Incognito school of blocking?
Incognito would be nice. I don't know. I don't know if you can in season. I know getting Eric Fisher back to being healthy, because I think he's considered one of the best run blockers.
Yeah, yeah, that's where they really seem to struggle without him,
yeah,
run blocking.
So that might help. I don't know. You got to figure it out. And it might not be the running. The running game might be a lost cause on the Chiefs offense, just because I just don't see it. Like, they're just not good in that area. I think the running backs are bad. I think LeSean McCoy is the only decent one, but he just can't hold on to the ball. You can't have that. You can't have him fumbling every game. I think he's the only one kind of worth a damn. So how you pick up the running offense, I have no idea. So you'd have to throw it. You'd have to design passes like throws, which I think Andy's kind of tried to do. And they haven't worked out so well. I mean, he's got a little screen happy on the biggest plays of the season, it seems like. Mm-hmm. It's been a little frustrating. But I also think, you know, there's some context, like the Chiefs-Chargers game. I think he was honestly... Fisher was playing so bad in that game, and the field was so shitty. I think they were honestly worried about getting Mahomes hurt. And I think they were kind of thinking, if we have to drop him back for any amount of time with this field, like... he's just a sitting duck, and we got to get Mahomes out of here healthy. So I think there's kind of, you got some excuses to go along with every game, but it's still kind of like, okay, we still need to see this. Because we haven't seen the Chiefs play an A game since the second quarter of the Raiders game in week two. That's the last time we saw this Chiefs team at their best. They played really well against Minnesota, but that's Matt Moore era. So that's not...
I mean, they put up 28 or something like that. They had like the four touchdown quarter.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Second quarter of the Raiders.
Didn't they do that to Baltimore too? Maybe?
Okay, yeah,
they
I guess
like another. But I mean, that's week three.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. So yeah, Baltimore came after that. You could say that was the A Chiefs, especially with how Baltimore looks now.
Yeah.
Clearly, it wasn't the same team at that point.
Yeah,
but yeah,
how the Chiefs like dominated Baltimore in that game when they did not score a point in the first quarter. Like, Baltimore got to start the game with a lead, and the Chiefs still did what they did to that team.
I was laughing at Baltimore the next few weeks. They struggled with Cincinnati too, and yeah. It was just like, you guys are mouthing off about playing the Chiefs in the playoffs. Like, you'll be lucky to get there. And now all of a sudden, my God, they are a fucking avalanche.
They've certainly taken off, I think, on both sides of the ball. They've just developed and improved as the season has gone on. And I don't know if that's something that you can necessarily say about the Chiefs. What's interesting, as I asked you the question about, like, you know, if you're the coach and you're an offensive team that is built on, like, speed and design, you know, people would say that the Chiefs' offense is a finesse offense.
It is, definitely.
So if that's the case, you know, how do you try to talk to them about physicality, or trying to talk to them about, finishing out close games? So a good friend of ours, huge supporter, Mike Howard, has been banging the drum over the last couple weeks about red zone efficiency.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this is something that entering the 2018 season, transitioning from Alex Smith to Patrick Mahomes, that... one of the more astute minds, and yes, I am pandering, but one of the more astute minds in sports, Nick Wright, talking about how, you know, people are wondering how and where the Chiefs can get better when you go from having such an elite offense with Alex Smith's last year here and switching over to Patrick Mahomes. And the thing that he pointed to was red zone efficiency, because the Chiefs were like first in the league in scoring Alex Smith's final year, but they were like 26th in red zone scoring. Yep. And so it was like they're getting all of these long touchdowns because they have explosive players like Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, but they're not taking care of business when the field is shorter. Well, the Chiefs proceeded to be like, you know, they were
first.
By far and away first in scoring last year.
First in red zone.
First in red zone last year.
Down to 23rd this year from 73%. Touchdowns in the red zone last year to 50%. Dead even 50% this year.
And so, I mean, that is an area where, you know, you talk about mental toughness. right? Or that kind of mental fortitude. It's the attention to detail. If you can clean some of those things up, then suddenly, instead of Harrison Butker lining up for 5 field goals a game, which are still combined with scoring touchdowns, but if you're turning those 3s into 7s, that certainly helps, obviously. I know that's low-hanging fruit.
But well, and this goes to, the Chiefs are in an area where they either have to put teams away or they have to get better in the fourth quarter, because they're not doing either at this juncture.
Yeah.
So you either got to jump on teams and get up on them by 21, which is kind of what they did last year, so that the 4-minute offense really wasn't an issue, because we were just up by 2 scores in most of these games.
Yeah.
And so that red zone offense, that kind of blends into that. Like, that's why the Chiefs aren't up by 2 or 3 scores going into the fourth quarter in some of these games, and they're a 1-score game, and they're having to gut a lot of these out. And the red zone. And this is something, this idea has crossed my mind, and this is something that Chiefs fans just want to flatly reject, especially going into this season. The idea of the NFL having tape on the Chiefs offense. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just kind of an idea that people don't want to think is a real thing. There was a huge pushback against Mahomes regressing this year. Like, you're not going to get tape on the Chiefs offense. You have to wonder if that's one factor in the red zone that, the Chiefs were kind of, they were being cute in the red zone last year. They did a lot of the push passes at the goal line. They did a lot of misdirection and stuff. You really haven't seen as much as that this year. I'm not exactly sure why. Because remember, didn't we do that a lot last year?
I feel like there are...
We'd have a couple walk-in touchdowns where it was just like, we just confused the defense so bad and they didn't know who had it, and all of a sudden, DeAnthony Thomas was walking into the end zone.
Well, and other teams are still utilizing stuff like that, trying to use essentially what is the width of the field as much as the length of the field. This is what, when people have talked about why the Chiefs' offense is so dangerous... you got that perfect quote from Chris Harris not too long ago where he was talking about, no one had ever run this route against me before on the, drag and go.
Yeah.
And he talked about, they make you cover every single blade of grass. It's not just that they can throw deep and so you have to, defend vertically. It's that they go so well from sideline to sideline across the field, too. And some of that is still based on speed, but it's all of this misdirection. And I think that there were people that joked, the first or second game that Tyreek was out, they had Mecole Hardman do one of those, circular motions where, they come across the formation and then they have to do this weird shuffling and go behind the quarterback and stuff. I don't know what they call that, but it is, a circle motion, semicircle thing.
Yeah, that's not it.
Well, Mecole Hardman looked really weird doing it compared to Tyreek, and so they're like, "Well, clearly we can't do this." I think that what has happened, I don't just want to blame it on injuries, but I do think that the injuries on the offense has forced Andy Reid to, get out of his own comfort zone, and not in a good way. And that, to me, whether it's because he doesn't trust a rookie like Mecole Hardman to be the stand-in for Tyreek Hill. I mean, even when Tyreek has been healthy, it's like Mecole's getting 10 or 15 offensive snaps a game. It doesn't seem like enough because of when he touches the ball, how impactful he is. But I don't think that we've seen a lot of the pre-snap type of stuff that I feel like really defined the Chiefs offense over the past few years. And I don't know if that's Andy getting away from it because he doesn't want people to figure out his tendencies, or if it's injuries and so he doesn't feel like he has the right pieces to be able to do that. I don't really know. Maybe they're doing it the same amount, but we're so used to watching it that it feels like, well, this isn't standing out to me the way that it was before.
Yeah.
I don't really know what's happening there, but I think that...
But you would admit they've done it in a couple big spots. Are you talking screen game kind of stuff?
I'm thinking more along the lines of, using motions...
Motion and misdirection.
And jet sweeps and stuff to try to, And some of this is games that the offense plays to figure out, are you in man or are you in zone? Where are guys shifting as we shift guys? The pre-snap chess match between head coaches and like offenses and defenses, it's so important. It's so important. Like, that's where you win on certain downs. And I think about someone like Tom Brady, the command of the game that he has, where the Patriots, especially if they're winning, but I would think almost every time, the Patriots are going to run the play clock all the way down, because sooner or later, you have to get in position on defense to where you're in the best spot to play the role that you're being asked on that given play. And, you know, you had talked about pace of play with Alex versus with Pat, how fast the team moves and things like that. There are certain times where I think, you know, going into no huddle, doing things like that to try to catch your opponent off guard is important. But I think it's also, especially if you're really trying to figure out what the defense is doing, it's that chess match means we can't snap the ball with 12 seconds left. Because, you know, I don't know. So football's really complicated. I could be totally wrong here.
Yeah.
One of the things that is kind of coming to my mind, though, as we talk about this, is that if the Chiefs aren't necessarily built on offense for smash-mouth football, the alternative to that is, as you mentioned, there are two things that the Chiefs aren't doing. They're not, like, getting up on teams, and they're not closing games out or being efficient in the red zone. And, like, if you got to kind of pick one or the other if you want to be the team mm-hmm. that goes and wins the Super Bowl. Well, to me, I mean, I think that in place of being overly physical, the way that you try to solve that or remedy that is being very aggressive. And I can't say that, I don't think that I can fault Andy and say, like, he's not being aggressive enough. There might be, inside of games, certain examples where the Chiefs decided that they were going to punt on a 4th-and-3 and you didn't like that they decided to do that.
Uh-huh.
Or we all hate that he keeps handing the ball off on like 2nd-and-20s after they, you know, get a holding call or something. Some of those do seem conservative. But the Chiefs are still throwing the ball on first down more than any team in the league. I think they're throwing the ball, period, more than any team in the league. And like, those are the tenets of being aggressive. Right? That doesn't mean that he may be aggressive in every single situation on every single down in every single game. But no offense is. Not even the Ravens that everyone loves are going to get it right every time. And so maybe it is during times like this, during the bye week, it's an opportunity to be able to step back and look at, like, well, if they can't be physical and we want them to be aggressive, like, how could they be more aggressive? Maybe it is, I think for a lot of people, they just don't want to see the team go into the Andy Reid shutdown mode. Because if we're honest, if what the point of that is to not like show things, not use plays that you want to save for later in the season, or maybe just be able to get other guys reps and kind of rotate your starters in and out or what. I don't really know, like, what the tactic there is.
Well, it just works so much better with like, Alex Smith and, like, an efficient, you know, 5 yards in a cloud of dust kind of offense.
Yeah.
Like, Alex Smith could churn out 5-yard gains like it's nothing.
Yeah.
Mahomes, when the Chiefs are at their peak, we'll churn out 20-yard gains like it's nothing. So we can march up and down the field like it's absolutely nothing. Now, when it came down to, like, big drives, you know, Mahomes was really good and he was clutch, but I don't think it was necessarily, like, the offense, like, okay, we got to, you know, go run 5 minutes off this clock. I don't think they've been in that situation with Mahomes that many times. It's been more like, hey, you got to go score a touchdown here. And, you know, he's come through in those situations. But
a lot of times.
These types of situations, it just, that kind of strategy lended itself to, like, an Alex Smith type of an offense. Mm-hmm. And doesn't quite lend itself to this type of an offense.
I mean, in a perfect world, with the skill position players that you have on offense, and a defense that is, if anything, opportunistic, right? That's what they are. You're trying to get them to, you know, hurry offenses up, get their timing off, and, you know, turn the ball over. Like, that's what Spagnuolo does. It's not about shutting a team completely down so they only have 200 yards of offense. Like, that's not what that defense is about.
Yeah.
Right? Well, So I think that that means that in a perfect world, the Chiefs' offense is never the kind that's going to play those grinded out games. They're going to score touchdowns in 2 and 3 play drives, and they're going to like make your defense just be so frustrated. We've seen all the great clips of guys being like, how did he put the ball in that place? Where did that receiver even come from? All those different things. That's the Chiefs' offense. It's making defenses, their coordinators, and their actual players feel, what, I don't know, flabbergasted. Just being like, what the hell is going on? How do we even defend this?
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's been so much defensive adjustment from year one to year two of Mahomes that, like, we don't have the ability to do that to teams. And so I wonder if the real emphasis for the Chiefs during the bye week is just rest.
Yeah.
They've needed it for so long.
Well, we haven't seen... The Chiefs have not been at full strength once. Like, really, once. The two drives against Jacksonville, because then Tyreek got hurt. And since then, when he came back, Mahomes was hurt. And when he came back, Fisher was hurt. And then they were supposed to be at full strength this game against the Chargers, and then Tyreek got hurt on, what, the first drive, the first play or something?
Yeah.
I mean, so we legitimately have not seen the Chiefs at full strength. So the potential is there. Like, I'm still very optimistic about the 2019 Chiefs. I still think they have the potential to really come together over this last month of the season and into the playoffs, because we've seen it from this offense. We've seen it over the course of entire last season, and nothing has really changed other than Kareem Hunt. We lost Kareem Hunt after the first, 11 games of last year. Other than that, we've seen this offense perform at a historic level. Not just elite, a historic level. And all the pieces except Kareem Hunt are still there, and so they should still be able to perform at that level. At the same time, we've all wanted the defensive improvement. The defense has shown improvement over last year. Let me run down some stats. 19th in points per game. 25th in yards per game, which I think most people would say is one of the least less important total stats. 12th in DVOA, 12th in red zone D, 14th in third down D, 12th in takeaways. All of this coming against the fourth hardest schedule of opposing offenses. So the defense is there too. So I still think all of the pieces are there for the 2019 Chiefs to come together. We just haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So if you want to make the argument, I hear Carrington say a lot, we have to evaluate the 2019 Chiefs for what they are and what they have been. And they haven't been great. I mean, they've been a 7-4 team that's looking at the 3 or 4 seed in the AFC, which, for most NFL teams is fine. But one very handsome podcaster made a bold prediction 3 years ago, and he needs to see it come true this year. And, expectations are just super high for this team, and fans are just kind of, I think, we're really frustrated because we haven't seen it all season. And so we want the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl on every play. And so every time we don't score a touchdown on a drive, like, it feels frustrating. Every time we're not blowing an opponent out, it feels frustrating. And it's just, we're trying to win the Super Bowl on every single play, and this is more a fans thing. I don't think the team is necessarily there, although maybe it might be leaking in a little bit. You kind of saw Mahomes get frustrated at, like, a third down screen call, I thought, against the Chargers, and he just kind of... Just like, man, what was that? Like, what are we doing? Why did I have to throw that? So that's, you really can't have that. You can't have it, leak into the team. But I think fans, that's the fans' frustration right now, is just like expectations were so high for this team, and we really haven't seen it since, I guess you could say, week 3. So it's kind of been, 8 games, 9 weeks over here that's just like, okay, let's go, let's see it.
So some of those stats that you rattled off, I want to zero in on a few of them.
Okay.
Listen, I have, for the longtime listeners of Amateur Hour, always forced Dirk to do a podcast during the week of Thanksgiving, and I've a couple times successfully got him to talk about being thankful for things, because that's just, that's me. I'm all heart. All heart, baby.
I'm all balls.
There you go. Thanksgiving, clearly my favorite holiday. Great that it's also Raider week. Like, this is the stars are coming together. Everything's coming up, Ryan. We get Romo on Sunday. And it's going to be too cold for the aforementioned Raiders. Like, this is such a great week for me. These are the same Raiders that lost to the Jets. by 31 points just 48 hours ago. It's so great. It's fantastic. Dirk, I am thankful. But I'm also kind of confused. Because as I was looking at some of the stats, many of which you just mentioned, the Chiefs are third overall in DVOA behind New England and Baltimore. I mean, the three best teams in DVOA are all in the AFC. We're, you know, fans are trying to talk about posturing for whether or not you're going to get a bye, and like, not looking great there. But not just third overall in DVOA, they are second in offensive DVOA, which is okay, you know. I mean, they were first.
Below expectation level.
Below expectations, but like, okay. 12th in defense, excuse me, 12th in defensive DVOA when we're in like week 12, 9th in special teams DVOA. Get out of town! I don't believe you. Get out of town!
Delete the website. That is a
how about this?
That's a tough one. You know, I don't know where that one's going. What have we done well in special teams? I mean, Butker's pretty good, I guess.
I mean, apparently last week, despite what I thought was like one, I distinctly recall a very bad Dustin Colquitt punt.
Yep.
But he had like five punts land inside the 20-yard line or something, and it was like special teams player of the week, Dustin Colquitt, and I'm like,
oh, wait, he didn't win that, did he?
I don't think so. But you know what I mean? That was one of those like key takeaways from BJ, where it's got all these interesting stats. It was like, Dustin Colquitt, first punter this year to drop five inside the 20 or something.
Just because he kept punting from the 50.
There you go. Well, I mean, the Chiefs are 12th in defensive DVOA, which is like the advanced metric that people like to rely on. And I mean, we don't necessarily have to dive into ninth in special teams in the NFL as far as DVOA is concerned. But like, your thoughts on this, Dirk?
I mean, thoughts. Well, thoughts on what? The defense being good?
I mean, based on the advanced metrics, the Chiefs have the 12th best defense as far as just like the 10,000 foot view of defense. The Chiefs are 12th in the NFL.
It's pretty wild. And I think a lot of it probably doesn't feel like they're the 12th best defense. A lot of it, I mean, it's the fourth hardest schedule of offenses. So that's one thing to keep in mind. The Chiefs have had a brutal schedule so far.
And man, it really lets up. And they have the Raiders, the Chargers, the Broncos, the Patriots, and one other game, right? We've got one other?
I don't know. I wasn't listening.
You weren't listening to the teams that we have left. Who do we have left on the schedule?
Oh,
I'm saying it really lets up in terms of like offenses that we're playing. It's Raiders. Oh, we still have the Chargers again.
Yeah, there you go.
Raiders, Broncos, Chargers, and then we have New England, and I think there's one more.
Yeah, there's one more in there.
I don't know who it is.
There's a team in there. Bears.
Bears. Also, bad offense. You know what I mean? Like, you know,
if the Bears moving on us, we got problems.
Technically, New England is the best offense in that group, and they have been terrible on offense recently.
The defense has laid just a couple stinkers in there. The Texans game was really frustrating for me, just because I thought it was way too easy. And then the Titans game was pretty bad, just because we didn't think much of that offense, I don't think, and they just kind of moved up and down. And yeah. Our tackling was abysmal in that game. I worry about our defense's emotional level. I think they can be good, but I think there was something to, they had a letdown once Mahomes came back, because it's just like, well, we don't have to be as good today because Mahomes is here.
That did seem so weird.
And because the defense against Minnesota and Green Bay was like, okay, this is a defense that we can ride with. Give me Mahomes and this defense, and you know, we got ourselves a stew.
Yeah, I mean, it started with the game in Denver, that Thursday night game, and it's like, I mean, obviously Mahomes got hurt, but like, the way that the defense was playing, it was like suddenly Steve Spagnuolo has like he's flipped a switch and said, you know what? Like, if this is the way that we have to play in order to be successful, then like we can be less cerebral and just be the aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's something that you and I have talked about on this great program for at least a couple seasons, where it's like, you know what? If we don't have the talent, whether it's due to injuries or just like we, you know, have gotten rid of players or draft picks haven't worked out, if you are the less talented team defensively, then one of the best ways to try to disrupt what other teams are doing is to be the aggressor. You play physical at the line of scrimmage, you play physical man coverage on the outside, and you try to make up for some of your athletic deficiencies. And, I mean, maybe I'm oversimplifying and people would say that's actually not how you do it, but, like, that's what I imagine. It's like, look, we're not necessarily going to be able to out-scheme you, but we can always try harder. We can always try to say, like, the best thing that we can do is give more effort than the team that we're playing against. And the Chiefs defense, I don't know that they're lacking in talent. There are certain positions where we think that they should be better, but I've been surprised by some of the guys on defense this year. So,
The talent, you want the defense to be league average. I think the talent is there to be league average. I think it's interesting. If you look at the season from afar, so I tell you from before the season, Chiefs record is 7-4. Mm-hmm. They're a game up in the AFC West, but here are the players that have missed time. Mahomes gets hurt. Tyreek gets hurt. Fisher's out for, 10 weeks in there. And you just kind of list all the players that have missed time throughout the season. Chris Jones got hurt. Frank Clark got hurt. I mean, you go through the list of the most important Chiefs, almost all of them have been hurt this season. And then you tell them the defense ranks 12th in DVOA. So this is the season. This is a snapshot of the Chiefs season at this point, and they tell you this before the season. You almost take it. Okay. So the defense is pretty good, and the offense has been banged up, and they just got to figure it out. And, they're not in great shape. They're not going to be the one seed or anything. They're not going to get a bye, but they're still getting one home playoff game. I mean, that's not a bad position to be in, especially with just the troubled season that they've hit with the injuries and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a very, very tumultuous season as far as health, because it just seems like as soon as you start to feel like things are coming together, somebody else gets hurt. So I look at this like, if you think about it defensively, right? As soon as Chris Jones comes back, you get the Frank Clark thing with the neck that apparently had been bothering them all year. But it's like Chris Jones finally back in the lineup and then, Frank Clark has to exit for a game or two. The defensive line, I feel like, has been really engorged due to this penile enlargement, right? that's my nickname.
Hey,
for him, it's not MVP Nell. Penile. He's penile.
The penile system.
But I mean, you see that. But then, God, losing Ogba, that really sucks, man. He was killing it, and like, I mean, I look at the defense, and it's like I feel like I'm gaining confidence about Charvarius Ward literally on a weekly basis.
The corners have surpassed everybody's expectations.
It was
everybody's number one concern going into the season.
So weird.
And they've been good. Like, it's a good little group.
Well, and it's like that, like, numb, silent Chiefs fan terror about corners that play good for like six games and then get figured out.
Yeah.
Like with Charvarius Ward, it's kind of starting to fade. We're talking about this is around 16 starts for him. He started that first game against Seattle, around this time last year. Maybe he's only at like 14 starts or something, but like we're about a full year into him and like he's getting better, still ascending and looks great. The kid can play.
I love Charvarius.
I mean, and what about Rashard Felton?
I'm not as high as Felton.
He's so good that everyone actually knows his name is Rashard Fenton, not Felton.
Could have fooled me. I thought we were talking about Raymond Felton.
Yeah, there you go.
Are you as high on Fenton? I feel like Fenton's been a little... I haven't been as impressed by him as others. But I've also been pretty drunk for a few games. The Minnesota game, a little touch and go.
Well, that's kind of how I would describe his play. Like, there have been
too drunk?
No.
A little touch and go?
Touch and go.
So he doesn't remember all those games either.
Maybe not. I mean, look, we're talking about a 6th round rookie that a lot of people I mean,
it's weird how we're running a rotation at corner. Because we'll run a rotation during the game.
Yeah, I mean, I never really know if...
Because sometimes Claiborne's out there.
The Twitter savior.
Sometimes Breland's out there.
Even doing anything. Like, I don't know. Well, so I'll tell you this. Craig, I know you're listening. Kent, I know that you're listening. And I have not yet heard... And now, I will admit, I have not listened to the podcast from this week yet. Been a little busy. But I have not yet heard the public apology that I think we all believe that Rashard Fenton kind of deserves from you. We're talking about a guy that I think that both Craig and Kent, and maybe even Matt Lane as well, probably all three of them.
Definitely all three.
That they were like, this was a terrible draft pick.
Joel Thorman too.
I don't think that this guy is going to make the team, and if he does, it's just because he was picked by this regime.
Wait, did we draft Fenton?
Yes. He was a 6th round pick. And like, we were all... I don't think that any Chiefs fan was like, you know who I'm really intrigued by? This Rashard Fenton guy. This was a player that I think for...
I thought we picked him up off the draft, off of someone else's scrap heap.
No, didn't.
I'll be damned.
We selected him.
There he is.
So, I mean, this is where...
Before Darwin Thompson.
And this is where I think that people are starting to look at the draft class from Veach and maybe turn the corner a little bit, because you're talking about, you know, obviously Hardman's played well in limited opportunities. Thornhill.
Hardman looks... Man, his explosion. He's got better acceleration than Tyreek.
I don't know if I would say that.
I think he's got better acceleration. Tyreek's top speed, I feel like, is better. But man, he took a screen the other day, and I swear, he's like cutting inside, and he just like makes a cut, and he's like... less than a second, and he's 9 yards downfield already. It was a blur.
Everyone noticed it. We were all like, holy crap. Like, he's... I feel like they need to manufacture touches for him.
Yes.
And, like...
I think... Well, you were mentioning his low snaps. His snaps went way up against the Chargers, I think.
Okay, I mean, that's probably because...
I think he started replacing...
out, and they were just like, we got
to... Oh, yeah, that's true. Know. That's true.
But...
He needs to be in there with DeMarcus. DeMarcus is kind of...
I feel like DeMarcus Robinson's time with the Chiefs is, you know, limited to the rest of this season, and that they're going to be, like, not...
He'll always have that one quarter.
...broken to move on. Yeah. I mean, he had a fantastic game. I guess... I think I got... All right. We got to do Sammy Watch.
Ugh.
We got to do Sammy Watch. Kins. Listen... This week's edition of Sammy Watch, Dirk's disgust is actually pretty appropriate. Kins. Week 1 performance for Sammy Watkins.
That's why we signed him.
Listen.
That's why we paid Sammy Watkins. He has the potential to be great in this league.
I will remind you, for those of you that are not, like, you know, Googling right now, by the way, just a great...
By the way, Google?
Just...
What a website, huh?
Great post from your dog right now. Just, like, ready here. That's, you know, very polite. All right, listen. Sammy's week 1 performance. 198 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns. I don't know how many catches he had. It doesn't matter.
I just want to remind you that that's why we signed him. Not the 20 games with 40 yards. Not those games. It's the one game where he's good, Ryan. That's why we paid him.
Let me.
Okay, do but that's the reason. Those games are the reason.
Kins, after his week 1 explosion, for the rest of this season, 2019, Sammy Watkins, despite the fact that Tyreek Hill was not the focal point of the offense because he was injured for many of these games, Sammy is averaging less than 50 yards receiving per week. And I did not include the weeks that he missed to take down his average. And he has 0 touchdowns.
Well, hold on. He didn't necessarily miss those weeks. He was active. It's just in those time between being active and the game starting,
That's fair. So what that means in the grand scheme of things is that Sammy's week 1 performance accounts for nearly 40% of his receiving yards this year and 100% of his touchdowns. Now, for the optimists in our listening audience, Sammy Watkins does have more catches, more yards, and the equal number of touchdowns as he did last season. And we're coming off a bye. He is presumably healthy, and we still have all of December to play, 5 games, 3 of which are at home. So, you know, maybe Sammy, you know, has a great 5-week stretch entering the playoffs. Maybe
that's why we signed him.
Maybe he gets, you know, hurt against Oakland, and then we are figuring out if he's, you know, going to be healthy for the playoff game. We'll see. Who knows? I guess here's the thing. After that week one explosion, because he's averaging less than 50 yards receiving and he's got 0 touchdowns, like, I think that this actually speaks to a different issue that's not just Kins related, all right? I think by the eye test, the Chiefs' offense is underperforming. And this is, I think we can almost exclusively chalk it up to injuries. I mean, as you mentioned, the people that have missed time, we had to watch Matt Moore play, all right? Like, they have they have had some issues with injuries. Now,
Matt Moore is a better football player in 2019 than Sammy Watkins. Continue.
Okay. All right. Listen, here's the problem, though. I said that this is based on the eye test because I don't really have any numbers to back this up.
Back it up, Ryan.
Back that thing up. I don't. They're top 4 in DVOA scoring and yards offensively. Like, that's pretty thorough. That means you're good, right? So I'm just trying to, like, think outside the box a little bit. So Justice Mosqueda, at JUMOSQ on Twitter. If you don't follow him, he's great. Justice, in the past, has talked about, like, if you are well above 500 or well below 500 in one score games, that, like, you're going to either progress or regress to the mean.
Yep.
That, like, the actual average is going 500 in close games. So he always has candidates each year based on if you were, you know, 5-1 in close games, that, like, your record's probably going to suffer next season.
Yeah, close games and turnovers are always two things that kind of even out to the mean.
So the problem with this is that last year the Chiefs were 5-5 in one score games, and in 2019 the Chiefs are 4-4 in one score games.
Hey.
And so I'm just like, oh, okay, so maybe.
Damn, I'm shocked we had 10 one score games last year.
Yeah.
That just shits all over my earlier podcast
also, like,
performance.
It gets into the playoffs too, like, some of those are included.
Okay.
But so now I'm starting to wonder if, like, the difference for this Chiefs offense, it's just, like, a matter of degrees, because we've established that they're clearly good. Like, there's no question about whether or not the Chiefs offense is good, but last year the Chiefs were first in offensive DVOA, and they were a full 10% better than the second-place team, which was the Rams, who were still, like, holy crap, amazing. Everyone all over Sean McVay. They went to the Super Bowl, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, I feel like we've probably heard this, like, any radio show that you listen to in Kansas City has probably said this in some way, shape, or form, maybe except for Fesco. I wonder...
right. There's no way Fesco's still on the air.
Oh, he absolutely is. I'm starting to wonder if it just seems like the Chiefs were so historic last year offensively.
There you go.
That the 2019 performance is underwhelming. Not because we're comparing it to, like, the other teams in the league, but because we're comparing it to 2018 Chiefs.
Yep. That is it.
And so, like,
it wasn't just that we were number one last year. It was that we were maybe number one all time last year.
Right.
Like, the offense was historic. Whereas this year it's just, you can even say it's elite.
Yeah.
You know, watching it in situations, I think they've struggled in some situational football and some big plays. I don't think they've come through. So I think that weighs it down a little bit, especially the eye test, more so than the numbers. But yeah, as you said, in most metrics, you know, maybe not number one, but 2 or 3 or 4 in pretty much every statistical category. So, yeah, still at the top of the league, just not historic.
And I think, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, friends of ours, like, Carrington has probably said this way more succinctly and just said, like, you know, for the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl, they have to be, like, that truly elite offense, and they can't just be merely good or merely great. And so far this season, whether it's because, you know, they were a regression candidate or because guys have been hurt or whatever, like, we just haven't seen them go be that type of offense that they were week in and week out last year. And I know that there are a lot of people that are still kind of attributing this to the Kareem Hunt thing, where, like, yeah, you know, in a 6 or 7 game sample last year, they were able to weather the storm and Damian Williams looked great. But now that you're looking at over the course of this season, the running backs are terrible, and you would, you know, be thrilled with someone like Kareem Hunt or with that skill set to be a part of this offense. But, you know, he kicks women. So, like, that's, I guess I'm just looking at this and I'm wondering, like,
does brutalize.
I mean, I didn't use that word.
I've seen the word used.
He kicked a woman. I'm not particularly interested in having Kareem Hunt conversations.
No, that's fine. That's
despite
fine.
That seems like there are a lot of Chiefs fans that are like, we're just going to regret this forever. We have Patrick Mahomes. I think we're going to be okay.
Man, don't you hate when Chiefs fans regret certain moves they make for forever? Don't you just hate that? Don't you hate that?
I'm in one of those categories.
Man, that one seems more recent than another one that was maybe not as long. We gotta have a couple sidebars here. First off, the Marcus Peters thing. I'm not interested in discussing this from even a Chiefs standpoint. From a Chiefs fan standpoint, really at all. How does Marcus Peters get traded for what he got traded for? This is what I don't understand. This is not.
It was like a fourth rounder.
I think it was a fifth round pick and a reserve linebacker. This is not the Chiefs fan base debating, you know, the merits of Marcus Peters, whether he wants to be here, blah, 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 all this. And the Chiefs got way more than the Rams did. This is, you know, 30 NFL teams, call it 29 if you want, not willing to spend that much on Marcus Peters. Like, it's no longer what the Chiefs fans think about him. And what the Chiefs fans thought about him, there was so much off-the-field stuff that, you know, chimed into this that it clouded the discussion. Okay, we're past that. This is NFL teams, NFL front offices, NFL executives. How did none of them think that he was worth more than that? They're just...
I don't really know exactly how this works. And I think that for, just the sake of honesty, I know that any argument that I make, people are going to see flaws in it because I love Marcus Peters. But
that's why I wanted to bring it up.
But like
because I don't care what Chiefs fans think. I don't care about your opinion on Marcus Peters. Why do NFL teams not value Marcus Peters more?
The Chiefs trade, I think, I was very surprised that
we were surprised that it was that low.
A 2 and a 4.
That was all we got.
That was very
they got way less.
Well, and I mean, here's the thing. Any team that was going to acquire Marcus Peters, you know, at or near the trade deadline, like the Ravens did, a week before the trade deadline?
Yep.
He is on his fifth-year option right now.
Yep.
And so you're basically saying, like, we either intend to invest in this person long-term and give him a contract, or we're just renting him. And so as far as the Rams are concerned, they have zero leverage. Now, you would assume that would you rather have this reserve linebacker and a fifth-round pick, or would you rather have Marcus Peters, that, like, the answer is very clear. The Rams chose one side of that bargain. The Ravens chose the other. As far as the way that it looks in a small sample size, the Ravens clearly made the right choice. But I never understand these trades when it involves a player for draft picks, because it never seems like it's enough. Like, yeah. Marcus Peters goes for...
Unless it's like Larry Tunsil, who goes for 2 first-round picks out of nowhere.
I mean, and Jalen Ramsey was a very big one, too. But, like...
He makes more sense.
But, dude, the Jadeveon Clowney gets traded for, like, a third-round pick? Seattle looks like they fucking masterminded getting rid of Frank Clark for a first and a second, and then trading just a third for Jadeveon Clowney? Like, that seems like they're the smartest organization in the NFL. And it was just like playing chicken with Houston or something. Like, and clearly Jadeveon Clowney is worth way more than a third-round pick to the vast majority of teams in the NFL. But because you have to give him a contract or all these different things, I don't understand how leverage works when it comes to, like, player for draft pick trades. Because, I mean, I look back, this is going to seem like a throwback, but, dude, when the Patriots traded Asante Samuel, I believe it was either to the Eagles or to the Falcons.
To the Eagles, yeah.
He went for a sixth-round pick, and he was, like, one of the highest-paid corners in the league. He was, like, 30 or 31 years old at the time, and he went for a sixth-round pick, and everybody was like, are you kidding me? Why wouldn't every other franchise in the NFL jump in to get Asante Samuel for a sixth-round pick? And I don't think that the NFL values guys when it comes to the draft pick trades the way that, I don't know. It is very weird.
I mean, even a team like the Texans, they traded a third round pick for Gerrion Conley, who I don't think is a good player.
I mean, he's
on his rookie deal.
I think he's only in his second year.
Second or third.
Yeah.
But he's not good.
I mean, he's a first round pick.
Then they picked up Hargraves. Didn't mind paying Hargraves, you know, the $12 million or whatever he's making this year.
Yeah.
They picked him off waivers, so there's no compensation there. But still, fifth-round pick and is almost the same as no compensation. So it's just like, it kind of baffles me how he went for this. Do you think the Ravens sign him long-term?
I mean, if I'm the Ravens, I would sign him long-term if I could pair Peters and Humphrey together, because I don't think that Jimmy Smith is going to be there long-term. I mean, because you think about it this way, if they keep Peters and Humphrey, the guy that was arguably their best corner last year, a dude that I loved coming out of the draft, remember Tavon Young?
Yeah.
Played at Temple? I called him Scrappy Dude.
Mm-hmm.
He got hurt at the beginning of this year and has been out. So, like, if you get him back, like, there's your three corners, and you can let Jimmy Smith go, and Brandon Carr's probably gone eventually, too. Because you're talking about just them getting older, both of those players, and, like, you're set in a pretty good position. Yeah. Now, Marcus Peters is probably the type of guy that you're going to want to offer the Sammy Watkins type of contract where, like, I'm going to give you a three-year deal that looks like you're going to make a bunch of money and give myself a very clear out after two of those in case. I mean, Marcus Peters, to me, is the type of guy that even if I wanted him to be a Chief for his entire career, I probably knew deep down, like, this dude is going to end up being like Deion, where he wears out his welcome in all these different places and plays for six different teams, but, like, wins rings, and, like, teams want him, but just not for long periods of
time. Or Aqib Talib. You could look at it.
Right, because you're talking about a guy that has not played for a bad team. He went from the Chiefs to the Rams to the Ravens. We're not talking about some dude that's getting shipped off to, you know, I don't want to make a joke about Buffalo because they're 8-3 and, you know,
no Buffalo jokes.
Seems like they're kind of on their way up. But, like,
All right, this is what I want to see. I want to see Marcus Peters on a bad team. I want to see what happens.
I mean, I think that that's what...
Was Washington bad when he was there? Did someone get kicked off?
They transitioned.
I want to see Peters on the Browns this year when they were struggling. That's what should have happened.
Yeah. I mean, that. Talk about explosive. All right, so I only have one thing left.
Well, hold on. I had another sidebar there.
Oh, yeah.
Something has been bothering me, and I've been saving up.
Okay. As you shuffled your position, I genuinely thought you were just going to fart. Like, it looked like something's been bothering me, and I've been saving it up.
Damn. Let's pause it. It'd be the gender reveal.
That was the most ridiculous video I've ever seen. Was that real?
That's what I wondered. I didn't see anyone question if it was real or not.
If you guys don't know what we're talking
about, her face really sells it.
Scroll through Dirk's timeline.
No, don't scroll. It's from like 2 months ago.
But a woman farts out like powder blue dust. Like literally
to signify she has on a boy.
And it comes out of her butt as a gender reveal.
If it's not real, she's a dynamite actress and has a perfect fart face. Because it was like a little bit of surprise and a little bit of, like, she laughed and she kind of tried to hide it. It was a perfect fart face. If it was real, how long were they sitting there just waiting for her to fart? I mean, was she eating, like, cheese beforehand and just trying to
like
pile out these farts.
Dairy and black beans and trying to really figure out. I mean, there's like fart poses, right? People are like, if I need to pass gas, I'm going to put my body into this position.
Is there?
Yeah, there's a fart pose.
I need to look that up.
It's not like in the official like yoga manual, but
I want fart yoga. Just 30 minutes empty your gas.
Do you think that, like, that people would be offended by farts? Is yoga, like, a safe space for farts?
My girlfriend's talked about there's being farts at yoga.
I mean,
at group yoga.
I don't care how old you are, farts are funny.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I would definitely be the person that's like, I'm not making fun of you, but I am laughing because a noise came out of your butt, and that's just gonna be funny forever. Any butt noise, it's funny.
Yep.
Sorry.
Yep. If a fart is not funny, take me off this earth.
You
I don't
have to
be here.
I'm not trying to make you uncomfortable. I'm just laughing because your butt made a noise. I laugh when my own butt makes a noise. Pretty much, yeah. All right, sorry. Your sidebar.
Anyways, I'm going to talk about something less socially acceptable than farting.
Okay.
Running the football.
Oh, all right.
We have gone too far in shitting on the running game in the NFL.
Hey, man!
I don't get it. Like, I think the nerds have just taken control and they got these charts and they're like, I mean, I guess I get it. You look at it and passes are worth more than runs, but I can't not look at the top of the standings in the NFL and be, you know, Baltimore and San Francisco are the two best teams in the NFL right now. Those are the two run-heaviest teams in the NFL. The Patriots, last year, they won a Super Bowl. Running the football was the basis of their offense. Look at the other teams. Minnesota loves to run it. Seattle loves to run it. The Rams, they can't run anymore. They fell apart. They don't even have a football team anymore. They're moving back to St. Louis. I don't understand all the shitting on the running game. Just in general. Like, we just think it's like a wasted play. And I get, we had the stats that everybody liked to, you know, look super smart to fight back against. Like, Team X is 85-0 when they run the ball 35 times. And I get why that's a super stat. I understand. I get it. But that doesn't mean that running the ball isn't effective. Like, look at the top teams in the NFL. They're almost all run heavy. And it's just, we just like dismiss it. Like, nah, it's because Garoppolo and it's because Lamar. Well, Lamar's running, obviously. But and even these teams, Seattle and Minnesota, people want to shit on because they're trying to establish the run, but they're overachieving. Why do you think this is just a coincidence? Like, I don't.
So I'm gonna say something that I guess depending on who you are, it might be considered offensive. But like, I feel like a lot of these arguments against running the ball are intellectually dishonest. And the problem is that it seems like the way that all of the advanced metrics, you know, that they're the group of people that is against the run, like what they're pushing, they are coming from this place of, you are wanting to see caveman football and I am the intellectual. And it's like, but you are so narrow in the way that you're looking at this that, like, you don't ever want to bring, like, the history of football context into this. Like, teams didn't even throw the ball for Lord knows how long, right? And don't get me wrong, when you see a revolution in the NFL, the way that it has become a passing league, I mean, it's no different from, like, the way that the Warriors started playing basketball. And everyone was like, you know, five
That's
spot,
very, very
lives
common.
Matter.
Very
you know,
common.
Like, you're talking about, like, suddenly the center doesn't seem like it's that important, but, like, you always need a guy that can get in there and rebound and do the dirty work. Like,
it... Okay. It's a perfect example, and I have a perfect rebuttal. They have Draymond Green, who does all that. If they didn't have Draymond Green, that wouldn't work. At least not to the level that it did work. Like, they wouldn't have multiple titles without Draymond Green being the one to do all that dirty work. And
but, I mean, that's a team that still also ended up having players, you know, during this historic run that they've been on, like Andrew Bogut and Zaza Pachulia. Like, they, I mean, don't get me wrong, those guys aren't playing 30 minutes a night.
Yeah,
but
they're,
like,
yeah.
You still need that to play a role and have a function in your team. And it seems like, this is why I say I believe that that a lot of the arguments against running the football are intellectually dishonest, is because it seems like people would rather see the Chiefs throw the ball literally every single down and just never hand it off.
So
now, I don't know if this comes specifically from, we have Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill,
that helps,
Sammy Watkins, Mecole Hardman, Travis Kelce, whatever, and we don't think that most of these running backs are very good. And so maybe it's right now in this very, very, you know, vacuumed state of the Chiefs offense that it is truly the best option to throw the ball. But I do not believe that you can just eliminate running the ball from the game plan that your offense is.
Yeah. And I'm not even necessarily arguing that the Chiefs should run the ball more, because they're not very good at it. But it's definitely a missing ingredient from the team. Mm-hmm. Like, don't you think their red zone offense would be better with a good running game? Don't you think their third down, their 4-minute offense would be better with a running game? Like, it's a missing ingredient from this offense right now. And I'm not necessarily... They're bad at it. They're bad at it right now. Like, mm-hmm. Their running backs are not good. So I'm not sitting here saying, like, the Chiefs need to establish the run and do all this. But this is more of a general NFL sense. If you don't think good running games win football games, I think you're blind.
Well, and I think that one of the problems here, this is something that we don't think about a lot, but so San Francisco, right? San Francisco is not doing the same type of running that Baltimore is. Baltimore is doing zone read because they have a guy in Lamar Jackson that can terrorize you,
yep,
with his legs. But San Francisco is lining up with, you know, a fullback that might be a little more athletic than your traditional fullback, but Garoppolo is going under center. And when you do a lot of those a little bit more traditional running plays, that allows your running back to take two or three steps and try to get up to speed before he even has the ball in his hands, instead of literally standing still when your quarterback is in shotgun and then getting the ball and having to take off. And so I think about this, and it's like, I saw over the last couple days, I think it was Brandon Kiley was the first person that pointed it out, but it was like Derrick Henry, a guy that we hate to play against, going to be a free agent this offseason. Not necessarily like go throw $10 million at him, and it was almost more like a joke, like just so we don't have to play him, give this guy a contract. The problem for the Chiefs is that unless Andy Reid, and I think that he probably does have the foresight, if you look at the guys that they have targeted as far as running backs are concerned, Derrick Henry would not fit in the Chiefs' offense because he needs three or four or five steps before the ball is in his hands to really, like, be the punishing player that he is.
And also, like, 15 or 20 carries before he really
establishes.
And, he's a second-half running back.
You would think that someone like Derrick Henry, like, the mentality and the size and the physicality of a runner like that would be great, but I don't think that that's the kind of runner that this team, like, that would thrive in this system. In order to find, like, the best guys that Andy Reid has had, I mean, don't get me wrong, in Kansas City we're all partial to Jamaal Charles, but, like, the cookie-cutter running back for Andy Reid, quite literally, is Brian Westbrook. You want a guy that, like, on a moment's notice can get up to speed. He catches the ball well. He's shifty in the open field. I mean, honestly, it might be like Kareem Hunt is a very, very apt comparison.
Oh, he's perfect, yeah. I feel like we fool ourselves into thinking that anybody can replace him at the same value because Damian, you know, had the same yards per carry and he looked good over a short period last year. And we're just like, well, we can just kind of plug anybody in there. And I think this season is proving that we can't.
Right.
And we need someone good at running back. So I would like to invest someone at running back. And someone like Tevin Coleman is someone I would have paid. 2 years, $8.5 million. That's nothing. But if we had Tevin Coleman on this offense, I feel like it just opens it up big time.
Right. And that's, you know, even in comparison, it's still not very much because gave Damian Williams like a similar contract. And maybe Damian Williams was 2 years for $6 million instead of 2 years for $8 million. But like a lot of the running backs in the NFL, like unless you're, you know, Zeke or Le'Veon or Todd Gurley or something, like guys are not getting massive contracts like that. And so I think that honestly, I mean, you just have to find a guy that's going to have the right skill set. But I do believe that running to football is important. And I think that you're fooling yourself if you don't think that it is kind of a missing element of this offense.
Mm-hmm.
I have one last thing that I want to do today that has nothing to do with football. Is there any more football that you want to do today?
We should probably talk some Chiefs Raiders a little bit.
Hell yeah.
Why don't you do your nonsense here?
Okay. So, I don't know how many of you listen to the Bill Simmons podcast, particularly the one that comes out like Sunday night, Monday morning with Cousin Sal. This is the first podcast that I ever listened to. And I feel like, man, I...
Before ours?
I feel like I've been listening to it for like 10 years.
It's really gone
like
downhill.
I've been listening to it for a long, long time. It's gone downhill, yes, but...
And yet there I am every week.
And I... Every single week. Well, if you don't listen to it, there's something...
That's what everyone's saying about our podcast right now.
Yeah.
And yet here I am.
And yet here I am.
Two hours of fucking podcast. Can you fucking cut it down to an hour? My God. Yeah, I hear you guys.
You know, you can take a pause if you need to. Yeah. Pause for the cops.
Go take a pauser.
At the end of each show over the last couple of years, they've been doing what they call Parent Corner. So this segment of Amateur Hour is brought to you by Parent Corner, which is brought to you by CarMax, and I'm going to call it...
Cat Dad Corner.
Sure, Cat Dad Corner, whatever. Amateur Isles. I'm just going to give you a little personal story because, you know what, like, I feel like we're all friends here.
Oh, boy.
My schedule right now is so stupid. I hate it so much. The biggest thing
about... So you just wanted to come on here and whine?
Just give me a second.
Okay.
The thing that's really frustrating is that on Friday and Saturday nights, I work at Corvino, down in the Crossroads in Kansas City, and...
Kendall Fuller.
It's like, yeah, I did see Kendall Fuller the other night. Travis Kelce a couple weeks ago, too.
Does Kendall Fuller look as cool in person as he does on a football field?
Very.
At least on the sideline. He doesn't look that great on the field, but on the sideline, Kendall Fuller is the coolest looking guy in every game.
Extremely cool.
Even in person.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Has he got the headband thing on?
He had like a hat, but like Ooh. a bean. It was great.
A bean?
A beanie.
Look a beanie.
Look good. Look great. Very handsome. The problem that I have is that, you know, Monday through Friday, I have to be awake and alert and alive inside of a classroom no later than 9:30. It's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 o'clock. Yep. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I have a 9 a.m. and Tuesday, Thursday, I have a 9:30. Just the luck of the draw this semester, it's terrible. Friday and Saturday night, I have to be at work until most of the time midnight, but like I don't fall asleep until like 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm wired from work, like I need to get the work off of me.
Yeah.
Can't go to bed.
Yeah.
And so I'm
sometimes you come over to my house and you will not shut up.
I live these two lives. And it sucks. My schedule is a nightmare.
You got a second family.
So
that's your parent corner.
What has happened multiple times over the last like month or so, there's something that's going on with my phone alarm. I've slept through my alarm multiple times. I've literally been like testing my phone to see what the problem is. And I think I'm just sleeping through it. Like, it seems like it's working when I do it, and I'm awake, and I'm messing with it. So I'm in such a deep state of sleep at the time that I need to be awake that I just sleep through the alarm. Well,
it's like a Fight Club situation.
So, this is all leading up to, I'm currently having to do observations at high schools to, like, learn how to be a teacher. And at some of these observations, you have to teach. Well, yesterday, Monday of this week, I was scheduled on the first day of my Thanksgiving break to be at a high school that's about 30, 40 minutes from my house, and I had to be there at 7:45 in the morning. Monday's like the hardest day because Saturday night I end up driving home from work. I never fall asleep before like 4 or 5 in the morning, Saturday into Sunday. So then I sleep late, but then I gotta go to bed early because I gotta, you know, be ready to teach a class at 7:45 in the morning.
You should just turn it into a six-day week.
Well, wake up, not to my alarm, look at the clock, it is 7:45. Frantically, like, texting my UCM liaison saying, I'm late, like, red alert, I just woke up, this is my nightmare. Having to email the teacher at the high school, I am late, I can be there in like an hour, like, please, I am so sorry. Absolute disaster. The UCM liaison cancels, says...
Cancels the class.
No. Like, I won't be there to
Shuts
watch.
Shuts down the program.
But videotape it and send it to me. And we'll count it, even though I'm not physically in the classroom. All right, awesome. Take my GoPro. Take my GoPro. Get into the classroom.
Go snowboarding.
Everything is fine. Like, my liaison's not there, but we can record it. I have averted this crisis. The teacher at the high school, super chill, just like, no big deal, it's fine. Just set up the camera. The principal says it's okay. Everything's fine. Go in there. I'm like, all right, get all set up. I'm ready to teach. Hit the button, go up there, teach my whole lesson. Everything's great. I'm like, God, I don't know how I pulled this off. Go back once the lesson's over. The GoPro was on photo, not video, so I took a picture instead of hitting record and recording the lesson. And so not only did I do all the frantic bullshit because I slept through my alarm, I then was still so asleep that I did not even have the fucking camera on the right setting. And so then I ended up spending the rest of Monday having to write an entire new lesson.
We better be recording this. Is it recording? Yeah, I think we're recording. Okay,
good.
Better be.
Long story short, I had to write a whole new lesson and create all the worksheets and all the crap that you have to do inside of that lesson to turn around and do this again on the upcoming Monday. And, like, we'll see if I wake up in time. I just hate it.
So your career is over.
School sucks, man. It's just the worst.
Not going to be a teacher anymore?
No, I'm going to be a teacher. It's just...
You're kicked out of school.
You know, a lot of people go to college for 7 years. All right.
Wow.
Thanks.
So nothing happened.
Thanks, Parent Corner. Thanks, CarMax. Thanks, Dirk. Thanks, you guys. All right. Well, that's it. You got Raiders stuff. Do you want to rattle off some Raiders stuff?
I mean, I don't got too much. I will say I have a take. I'm actually a little less confident in the game after that Raiders performance.
Yeah.
From last week. Mostly because I worry more about the Chiefs from an emotional state than I do a physical state. So I'm almost a little bit worried that they're not going to be as up for the game now. Like, it won't be as seen as big a game. So hopefully that's not the case. I mean, I kind of look at it like it's mostly a defensive thing and kind of like how they played versus the Packers and Vikings without Mahomes. I felt like they're really into it. Once Mahomes went out in that Denver game, like, they just stepped it up. Mahomes comes back, they breathe a sigh of relief and don't really perform. So that's just kind of one take. I do also think, I tweeted this out, but I think Kelsey's going to have a big game because there was a lot of George Kittle is the best tight end in the NFL chatter. Mm-hmm. And it was said on a national broadcast and then on all the shows. So I think Travis Kelsey heard some of that and he'll be out to prove something on Sunday.
I'm down with that, man. I mean, I think it's going to be cold. The Chiefs are coming off a bye. I'm hoping that they're... Too cold for the Raiders.
I don't even remember how to do it anymore. It's
too cold!
Too cold!
Oh, man. That was a fun night. Man, that was a fun night. Listen, folks, this has been Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. He's his Dirkness. This is Beck. If you haven't listened to the new Beck, I've been telling you. I'm trying to tell you. The new Beck. It's super good.
New Beck.
This one is Chemical. What it's called. I mean, are you going to the game? Are you going?
I don't know.
Yeah. If the Chiefs are coming off a bye, man. Andy Reid off a bye. Feeling confident.
Oh, yeah, Chiefs off the bye.
Yeah.
There's a thing.
Used to be, at least.
Yeah. I think we've had... I don't think it's been that great with the Chiefs off the bye.
I don't know.
Did we lose last year? that last year? 2 years ago, I know we did.
Didn't we have a... I think we had a late buy last year, too, right?
It's time to fucking turn it on.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all been wanting a blowout for a few weeks now. I think this is the week for it.
Yeah. If not, I mean, next week in Foxborough would do. I wouldn't complain about that.
Oh, hey, the red button. Do I hit the red button?
The stop button.
The stop button. Got it. Too cold.
Hey, I really enjoyed that.
Congratulations, honey. You were great.